Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. The time is 1:30. I would like to welcome the Senate President, Senator Michicki. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson, welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens, thank you for making time this afternoon. And Senator Reback, welcome. And I'm Senator Costello. Our recording secretary is Carrie. Our LIO operator is Carson. Thank you for making this meeting possible to share with Alaskans who are tuning in. Today we are having the first hearing in our committee in the introduction of the bill, Senate Bill 26, introduced by Senator Wilson. This is the repeal the Certificate of Need program. We will ask Senator Wilson to introduce the bill and have his staff go through the sectional. And then we also have some invited testimony. We will then open public testimony and close public testimony and then hold the bill for further consideration. So that's our agenda for today. And welcome Senator Wilson to the committee. Please feel free to provide your information on the bill and introduce your aide, and we will take questions from members as we go along.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, for hearing Senate Bill 26 today. For the record, my name is Senator David Wilson, and with me is my trusty, loyal staffer who does everything wonderful and right, Mr. Gary Zepp, if he wants to put himself on the record.
For the record, my name is Gary Zepp, staff to Senator David Wilson.
Madam Chair, if it pleases the will of the committee, where I was just going to give a brief introduction. Mr. Zepp was going to go over the presentation, then do a sectional, if that's all right.
That sounds fine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you, Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Before we begin this presentation, I just want to make sure everyone understands how complicated health care services are in general, especially in this great state of Alaska. And is ever not a surprise that health care in our state of Alaska is the most expensive health care services in the world. So, but at the same time, I'm sure we know we don't have those elite health care services that you would think of being the highest paid health care services, not just in the world, but in the universe. We also wanted to thank all those folks that are willing to give public testimony today. There we go. As we heard, throughout this topic out of the past 4 years, this is the fifth year of this piece of legislation, that this topic brings up a lot of mixed feelings, that some are willing to come forth and testify, but others don't want to come forth and testify because of the pressure of larger players involved. We have heard from many that are fearful of losing their hospital privileges, and that would hurt the relationship they have with the providers that currently have Certificate of Need. Senate Bill 26 repeals the Alaska Certificate of Need program and provides a 3-year window before the repeal becomes effective. We feel this will give time for those organizations that have Certificate of Needs to go ahead and plan for a time when there is no longer the coverage and sort of protection of limited entry of having a Certificate of Need. We have examined the historical and current arguments of Certificate of Need laws. For those members, I believe, that came in and talked with Mr. Zepp, they may have seen the many, many banker boxes of data and information of the reasons and rationale of why to repeal Certificate of Need. And we probably have maybe like a folder of those reasons to support Certificate of Need compared to the data of why we should eliminate Certificate of Need. Mr. Zepp will talk upon the many, many years of data and how many administrations, both Republican and Democrat, going back since the 80s, that have all supported Certificate of Need issues on the federal level. Alaska Certificate of Need program proposes a substantial threat to the proper performance of the healthcare market and services. Certificate of Need does not provide the economic justifications of depriving consumers of the benefits of a more open market. And just make sure, healthcare will never be a sort of a free open market. Healthcare services are always going to be a heavily regulated entity. I personally prefer my doctors to be licensed, and make sure it wasn't the same guy who just drove me there by cab is also not providing open surgery on me on the same day. originally, the Certificate of Need was a federal mandate, and Congress intended the intent behind enacting Certificate of Need under the federal law, under the Planning Resource Development Act in 1974, was to cut down on the cost of health care inflation. At that time, reimbursement services were based on a cost of production or a cost-plus system, and that's not the case anymore, Madam Chair. Providers, therefore, had a strong incentive to build and expand their healthcare capacity facilities. Once that reimbursement system moved and shifted to that fee-for-service, the feds decided that it was time to repeal Certificate of Need. And that mandate was in 1987, citing that the program did not effectively restrain healthcare costs. And many states have since have repealed Certificate of Need altogether or have modified it so it only covers one or two services. And with that, Madam Chair, I think that I will not steal any more Mr. Zepp's thunder, and we'll allow him to go through the presentation.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Welcome, Mr. Zepp.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair Costello and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Zepp, staff to Senator David Wilson. As the Senator mentioned, Senate Bill 26 seeks to repeal Alaska's Certificate of Need program. It provides for the Department of Health and Social Services to begin regulation development upon enactment into law. This legislation would provide 3 years to allow existing businesses and banks to recoup their investments in healthcare facilities and services before the repeal becomes effective. We don't want them to fall off a cliff. If Senate Bill 26 passes, oversight in terms of licensing and accreditation will remain the same as it is now. Licensing occurs through the Division of Healthcare Services, and accreditation through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, otherwise known as CMS, a facility's Medicare administrative contractor, and the accrediting organization. In addition, any entity subject to a certificate of need that has a current CON or existing CON activity at the time of repeal would still be subject to certificate of need conditions, as there would be a twilight and general wrap-up of the program. And as the Senator mentioned, Senate Bill 26 has an effective date of July 1st, 2024. Senate Bill 26 is not a magic bullet that will fix all of Alaska's health care challenges, but is a big piece of the puzzle. And why repeal Certificate of Need? It's about price and quality. It's about allowing new entrants and encouraging innovation and technology. It's about removing barriers and allowing health care competition in Alaska. It's to slow down the medical tourism and keep those Alaska dollars in Alaska's economy, and to increase healthcare employment opportunities by allowing a free market and providing healthcare providers with additional employment options. The current CON provides exemptions for some healthcare providers, but not others. It allows healthcare vendors to manipulate and circumvent the process. Don't we want Alaska to be open for all businesses? Shouldn't all business entrepreneurs have opportunities and are allowed a fair and open competition and level the playing field for all healthcare businesses to participate? Madam Chair and committee members, our healthcare providers are cherished and valued members of our communities. Senate Bill 26 is a concept of repealing Alaska Certificate of Need program laws. The legislation is not meant in any way, shape, or form to dishonor, disrespect, or minimize how important our healthcare providers are to Alaskans. We'd like to sincerely thank our beloved healthcare providers across our state who are always there to take care of Alaskans, and especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. A huge thank you to all of them. Madam Chair and committee members, with your permission, I'd like to focus on just a few slides so we can have time for our invited testimony. These are national experts, including healthcare economists, national researchers, and healthcare providers that have the data and experience in healthcare and research that support repealing Alaska's Certificate of Need. This issue has been heavily studied for over 40 years. Research and experience shows that states that do not have a Certificate of Need have a better quality of care, improved healthcare outcomes, increased access to healthcare providers, allowing new entrants and technologies as compared to states that do have a Certificate of Need. And please note that the states that have fully repealed their Certificate of Need reveals over 40% of the population, or about 131 million Americans. They have functioning healthcare markets and research shows the cost of certificate of need exceeds its benefits, especially if you're a consumer who is tired of paying the highest health care prices in the world. At the last committee hearing, the topic of Florida and Georgia came up, and they did do some repeals recently, but they still have some certificate of need requirements. So I just wanted to put that on the record. This reflects, slide five reflects the history of Alaska's legislative path, if you will, for certificate of need. So here's a few data and research points derived from various studies as to why we should repeal certificate of need. Certificate of need programs limit the introduction and expansion of medical services and equipment, rehabilitation centers, nursing home beds, and medical imaging technologies. The data and research indicates that deaths from treatable complications following surgeries and mortality from heart failure, pneumonia, and heart attacks are significantly higher in certificate of need states than non-certificate of need states. And you'll hear from proponents of CON as to why we should have a CON. And let me explain what we've found through our research and discussions with healthcare providers throughout the country. Regarding rural hospital closures, the data and research that the closures are related to low patient volumes, changing payer mix, Medicare and Medicaid patients, which pay less, geographical isolation, they're located far away from urban centers, and workforce shortages. None of this has to do with whether you have a certificate of need or not in your state. The next topic I'll talk about is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, also known as EMTALA, otherwise known as charity care, or otherwise known as indigent care. Studies have shown there is no evidence that charity care is higher in a certificate of need state than a non-certificate of need state. And according to the American College of Emergency Room Physicians, emergency care in America is just 2% of all U.S. medical costs. And keep in mind, the certificate of need concept from the 1970s is to charge private insurers 2 to 3 times the amount for services versus non-insured patients so hospitals can cover their uncompensated care. Additionally, the Department of Health and Social Services allocates out what's called the disproportionate share hospital payments. These are federal dollars paid to hospitals throughout our state to help with uncompensated care. In FY 2018, the state distributed $17.6 million. In FY 19, it was $25 million. In FY 20, it was $20.8 million. Another topic you'll hear about is the increased Medicaid-Medicare costs if we repeal Certificate of Need. Again, there is no evidence that the states that repealed their Certificate of Need saw an increase after they repealed Certificate of Need. And keep in mind, the states that have repealed Certificate of Need represent 40% of our population, or 131 million Americans. Their healthcare markets function just fine.
And for the record, this is Senator David Wilson. I just want to go back and point out on the slide that talks about healthcare margins in our state. Our state has one of the most profitable healthcare margins in the world. Average is about 6.9% in terms of profitability. Here in Alaska, we have one in Anchorage that's at 20%, and my own hospital in the Mat-Su is actually one of the highest in the state at over 24%. And so a lot of the data that you're going to hear is more of anecdotal type of data. But I can reassure you that this bill, Senate Bill 26, is probably the most research and the most empirical heavy data bill that we have in this legislature right now, the amount of volumes that speak to the importance of why we need to repeal Certificate of Need.
And on slide 7 here, these are some of the issues that we've already covered, rural hospitals and the charity care and so forth. And I'll just mention that, Madam Chair, in your committee in particular, we've had the Federal Trade Commission, Department of Justice, the Mercatus Centers, and others that have testified in this committee on behalf of supporting Certificate of Need. And I'd like to just briefly mention about why would Alaska's healthcare providers not want to open Alaska to a free market? Well, here's some data examples to think about. Alaska ranks the highest in the nation at $11,064 per capita in total medical expenditures. And as Senator Wilson had mentioned before about the hospital margins, I won't talk about that. But it's interesting, the Anchorage Consumer Price Index from 1991 to 2017 went up 77%. Amazing. Medical care was part of that index. That was up 210%. And I just want to mention that 25 jurisdictions had suspended or loosened certificate of need requirements during the pandemic. This enabled healthcare providers flexibility regarding hospital bed capacity and equipment. In Alaska, we suspended certificate of need regulations for about 10 months. It began on March 31, 2020, and ran through February 15, 2021. The CON laws and regulations are promoted as being necessary for our health and safety. The suspensions provided healthcare providers flexibility and hospital bed capacity, yet the suspension of the CON laws and regulations during the pandemic seemed to work out just fine. So if we can suspend CON regulations for 10 months, why do we need them? We believe in a free market economy where Alaskans decide which products and services will succeed and which ones will fail. We believe in private sector businesses and local control of resources and property. We believe that Alaskan consumers should have the choice when selecting a healthcare provider. This creates competition and assures that businesses have to compete for your hard-earned dollars. And we talked briefly about medical tourism. Imagine how many more opportunities might be possible if less Alaskans had to seek medical care out of the state due to the costs we pay here. And on the slides that I briefly passed through there, you can see the stats there. But Alaska's economy is losing those dollars because of the price of health care in Alaska. For businesses, repealing certificate of need offers the opportunity to slash the single highest line item on their balance sheet, health care. Over 40% of businesses in America are self-insured. They pay the cost of care for their employees and do not rely on third-party insurance systems because it costs too much. CON has distorted the Alaska healthcare market and created more self-interest concerns. This doesn't benefit Alaskans, and it doesn't benefit healthcare workers. This path is unsustainable. Can Alaskans afford to wait or enlist the markets to respond? We can channel our efforts to guide change. Do we want to control as best we can our destiny or let change guide us? We respectfully ask for your support of Senate Bill 26 and repeal government control of your healthcare options, facilities, and services. Thank you, Madam Chair Costello and committee members, for the privilege of presenting today.
Thank you, Mr. Zepp and Senator Wilson. I'm actually going to go to member questions first before we go to invited testimony so that those folks online can hear our questions. If I might start with a few questions, then we'll go to Senator Gray Jackson. So we have a piece of legislation that's coming out of the Senate, or it came out of the Senate Finance Committee, that would retroactively continue the disaster declaration and then extend it until December 31st of this year. I have heard that hospitals want the disaster declaration status, but what you're telling me is that the certificate of need that hospitals want was actually waived during the disaster declaration status this last in 2020. Is that correct, Senator Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair. It was waived for 11 months.
Okay, thank you. And so if the disaster declaration is extended until the end of this year, under that situation, certificate of need would be essentially repealed, whereas if the disaster declaration is allowed to end the day that it ended on February 15th, then if this bill were to pass, there would be a three-year period that we could transition into a new phase where there is no certificate of need. Is that your understanding, Senator Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair, but with the new, if the disaster declaration were to pass, that's current bill that is in the Senate Rules Committee now, if that bill were to pass, either the commissioner or the governor would have to waive that regulation again to have the certificate of need be waived under the regulatory process.
And Senator Wilson, are you aware of any negative results because certificate of need was waived for that 11-month period?
Madam Chair, with our research, I believe there is only the one application that was pending during this time period, and they still went through the regular application process. We have seen no entity that wanted to come up to Walmart didn't start opening up a new inpatient clinics. Where there were no imaging centers that decided to open up, and no one else that had wanted to come to Alaska. We talked to a couple of dialysis entities that wanted to come up during Alaska. They had the opportunity to do that, and they did not do that with the certificate of need being waived.
I have one more question before we go to Senator Gray Jackson. You had mentioned in your opening comments that the federal government removed the certificate of need program or a requirement for it. In what format did the federal government provide that? Was it in legislation? Was it a resolution? How was that repealed? And if you don't have that in front of you, that's something that you could get to me later, Senator Wilson.
Was it the planning?
Mm-hmm.
1974. Yeah. So, Madam Chair, it was the Health Planning Resource Development Act in 1974, and they repealed that that act in 1987.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You basically asked the question that I'm going to some extent. But so before 1987, the feds required that all states had a CON, correct?
Yes, through the chair, yes.
Okay, and then after that, it was repealed and states didn't have to do it. It was their decision whether or not they wanted to do it.
Through the chair, yes.
Okay,
Madam Chair, through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, may I add to that? When this law was initially enacted, the federal government tied federal funding associated with states that would enact a certificate of need law. Every state except Louisiana enacted a certificate of need law. Louisiana did not.
Thank you. If I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
So in other words, what you're saying is if you wanted federal funding, then you probably should have a CON back then.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, that is absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, can I just follow up? Just one more question,
yes.
Please? Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, like, I mean, I read the material that I had prior, but so, like, in one sentence, how does CON contribute to higher health care costs? Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, imagine for a second that here in Juneau, Alaska, the government mandated you had one grocery store. Foodland was your only choice. Fred Meyer's was not available, Safeway was not available, neither was Super Bear. What do you imagine the prices of groceries would be if you had one shopping center to buy groceries from? And that's kind of a rhetorical question, but when you limit supply, costs go up.
Supply and demand. Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Machicki.
So I appreciate the bill, and I really appreciate the discussion. I think there's a little bit more to it than that. And at some point, we should probably talk about the reason there's a Certificate of Need program. In Alaska, it's particularly important because if you had a marginal facility that was going to be built, and there was the possibility that someone else was going to build a marginal facility, you might not build any facility at all. So it was a way to encourage construction of a facility, knowing that you wouldn't have so many competing interests. Now, I'm a free market guy. I understand why you're pushing a bill to remove certificate of need. And it may not be as important as it once was. But when Alaska was a much younger state and communities like mine were thinking of expanding their hospital, if there's the potential for a lot of other facilities, it may not have been expanded, and we may have had to continue to depend on the facilities that were in Anchorage and other places. So there was a benefit at one point, and we may be past the need for needing that benefit any longer, but it essentially allowed facilities to be built that probably would not have been built back then. And I'd love to just hear from, and I don't know who you have for invited testimony, but I just think it's important I'm likely going to support repealing certificate of need at this stage of Alaska's development. But it would be nice to hear from others that truly understood the value back then and the intent of CON. Typically, when you have that wide a distribution of policy like the feds did back when CON was created, it generally has a purpose, right? I'm not a bureaucrat. I agree that sometimes people throw things around because it seems convenient at the time. But it would be nice to hear a little bit more about that history and how folks today feel about repealing CON that may have been favorable to it back then.
Senator Michicki, we do have many people online, so they're all listening right now. So if there is somebody who can provide that, or the bill sponsor, Senator Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. For the record, Senator Wilson, I don't want to go into the whole history, but I do want to just put on the record that certificate of need, you know, for hospitals, we've heard from hospitals, particularly one that just went alone and sort of is a self-funded hospital, who are afraid of an ambulatory surgery center opening up. They're opening up in a business where they have to still provide Emtala services through their ER, and every hospital, doesn't matter what hospital nationwide, no hospital makes money off their emergency service, their emergency department. And so those departments are all either supported through the DSH fundings, the DSH department allotment funding that the state of Alaska we give to those entities, or they make it up through their other surgery or ambulatory services in the hospital. And so hospitals are afraid of losing that profit margin that may be going to other centers. The risk of that is there are a lot of loopholes and certificate of need. So, for example, you can have a dollar threshold amount where an ambulatory surgery center that is either privately owned through physician funding that doesn't have a corporation behind it, or individual. You can have a IHS beneficiary, Indian Health Service, is exempted from a certificate of need. So they could open up as many ambulatory surgery centers as they would like to within our state. Is another loophole, or the dollar amount of a corporation could be, I think, a $1.5 million entity. So you run the risk of having these one- or two-room ambulatory surgery centers, and when something goes wrong, it's going to go wrong fast. And so they won't have the staffing or the equipment to help have a better outcome if something were to go wrong. And so that's sort of the pros and cons of a certificate of need. And like I said, if you the senator from Sedona's question, you know, his community, right, as of today, if they wanted to build a hospital, you could have a hospital in Anchorage spend $2 million to fight their certificate of need effort because they may want to expand into that facility. And so right now, as that goes, it's the same equivalency to say, hey, you want to open up a Burger King? Well, guess what? McDonald's is going to spend three times as much money to fight you to open it. And that's just not the way our economy and having those open markets should work here in the U.S., not alone Alaska.
And if I could, Madam Chair, through the chair to Senator Michicki, just to follow up a little bit. Like Senator Wilson said, right now the $1.5 million threshold, on Monday I spoke to a healthcare provider for an hour on the telephone. This is an example of many conversations I've had over the last 5 years. They will tell you on the record they don't like certificate of need, especially in the beginning, because they couldn't open facilities. But after you have five facilities in the Valley, in Kenai, and Anchorage, then I like certificate of need because it blocks people out. It protects the incumbents. And just like any other industry, you have to have economics that drive the free market. If the market is there, people will do their homework and be successful. If they don't do their homework and the economics don't pencil out, they won't survive.
So now I'm planning to go into invited testimony. We have three individuals provided by the sponsor and their staff. And then following that, we will go ahead and go into public testimony. So our first invited testifier is Dr. Matthew Mitchell, the Senior Research Fellow at Mercatus Center. And Dr. Mitchell, if you could also let the committee know what the Mercatus Center is and who supplies the backing to it, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and distinguished members of the committee. As you mentioned, my name is Matthew Mitchell. I'm an economist and a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. The Mercatus Center is a nonprofit research center affiliated with George Mason University. Our funding is entirely through donations. So we actually have a pretty solid wall of separation between research and funding. So I can't tell you a lot of details about our funding, and that's by design so that nobody can come to us and say, I want you to research policy XYZ and come to conclusion ABC. I pick all my own research topics and come to my own conclusions. I can tell you generally we are mostly funded by individuals and foundations. I believe that less than 1% of our funding is from corporations. So thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you today. For the last several years, my colleagues and I have been studying certificate of need laws, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to share with you some of what we've learned. As was mentioned, at one point the federal government encouraged states to adopt certificate of need laws through federal matching funds. I believe actually Congress never followed through with its plan to withhold funds that didn't adopt CON laws, which is one reason why Louisiana was such a holdout. Congress kept suspending the matching funds. But they started this in 1974, the National Health Planning and Resources Development Act. And then as evidence began to amount that CON laws were failing to achieve their goals, it was a bipartisan Congress that ended up repealing the federal mandate. Since that mandate was repealed about three decades ago, some 15 states have eliminated their CON programs. And several others have pared theirs back, including most prominently Florida, significantly pared their program back in recent years. So now about 40% of the U.S. population actually lives in a state that has no certificate of need law for health care. These are a diverse set of high-income, low-income, urban, rural, coastal, and intercontinental states. So for the last several decades, health economists have tracked outcomes in these non-CON states, comparing them with outcomes in states like Alaska that continue to require CONs for health care. And controlling for both observable and unobservable factors, their research has come to a number of conclusions. In particular, the clear pattern is that CON laws do not achieve the stated goals of their advocates, at least at this point. So, in fact, they seem to make matters worse. So in those states that have repealed their CON laws, patients enjoy, one, greater access to care, two, higher quality of care, and three, lower cost care. I'm going to run through each of these in turn. So on access, the data really are overwhelming. In non-CON states controlling for other factors, there are more hospitals per capita, there are more surgery centers per capita, there are more rural hospitals and more rural ambulatory surgery centers per capita. There are more hospital beds, and we found that there were more beds available during the pandemic. Even for those states that had temporarily suspended their CON laws, having the effect of a CON law still on the books, you know, it's hard to quickly acquire resources. And so we find that that those states that had not had CON laws for quite a while were in a much better position to handle the pandemic than those that did not. In those non-CON states, there are more dialysis clinics. Patients don't have to travel as far to obtain care, and they are less likely to leave their counties in search of care. And finally, there are smaller disparities in the provision of care in these non-CON states to communities of color. On average, patients tend to receive higher quality care in non-CON states, controlling for other factors. So, for example, one study of nursing home CONs found that nursing home patients were less likely to be physically restrained and more likely to benefit from higher RN staffing ratios. A separate study found that patients in non-CON states experienced lower mortality rates following heart attack, heart failure, and pneumonia, and lower readmission rates following heart attack and heart failure, and were less likely to die from post-surgery complications. Patients in these non-CON states are even more likely to give their hospitals a 9 out of 10 on a 10-point scale. Still, another study found that all-cause mortality is about 5% lower in non-CON states 5 years after repeal. Finally, payers spend less in non-CON states, both per procedure and per patient. Given this data, the first best option in terms of access, quality, and cost would seem to be to eliminate the program altogether. I'll let you know, however, that short of full repeal, states have pursued a number of reforms, and Alaska might consider some of these other alternatives as well. For example, the state might eliminate cons that restrict access to services used by vulnerable populations, such as its psychiatric services con. It might consider eliminating cons for services that are unlikely to be overprescribed, such as renal failure and radiation therapy, or cons that restrict access to low-cost modes of care, such as ambulatory surgery centers. There are a number of options to ease the administrative burden of con laws. For example, Alaska might reduce its fees or ease the administrative burden of the application process or require incumbents who unsuccessfully challenge an entrance application to pay the entrance compliance costs. I should note, by the way, that it's the incumbent's role in blocking a new entrance con application that is so controversial. That's partially what's made con laws so suspect for economists whose models tend to predict higher quality and more access and lower cost with greater competition. But it's also made it suspect for antitrust authorities in the Federal Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission, both of whom for the last several decades have taken the position that con laws are anti-competitive and harmful to consumers. The con criteria could also be changed. For example, a con application should not be rejected to prevent the provision of duplicative services. This essentially guarantees a local monopolization for the market. Finally, policymakers could consider a number of options that would increase the transparency to con program and make legislative oversight easier. For example, the board could be required to regularly disclose its con approval rate and the share of applications opposed by competitors, or the board could be required to ask applicants to estimate their costs of applying for a con and then regularly report these numbers to the public. All this said, however, I do want to emphasize, the bulk of evidence, again, conducted over the last several decades by economists left, right, and center, do suggest that the best, option in terms of access, quality, and cost would be full repeal. And this is based on the experience of the 40% of Americans that work and live and seek care in states that do not require a certificate of need for health care. So thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you today. I look forward to answering any questions that you might have. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. Next we have Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctor, could you give an idea of the comparison between full repeal and then you've made several suggestions on sort of a stepped approach. What have states done in that area? Have all of them that you've studied gone to full repeal? Have they some done the stepped approach? Any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, that's a great question. So I'd say that the most common form of repeal is, common form of sort of a stepped approach to appeal is to eliminate particular cons. And over the years, a lot of states have taken that approach. So, for example, West Virginia and Florida most recently, Florida had very sweeping con reforms where they eliminated almost every version of con. I believe they retained it for nursing homes. Indiana has done the same. Ohio has a very limited con program, I think only for nursing homes as well. So that's a relatively popular approach. Another one that is popular is to do a full repeal, but to have it take effect over a period of time. So New Hampshire did that, I believe, in the early aughts. The bill was passed, I'd say 2012 or so, and then it didn't take full effect for another 5 or 6 years. Now, one thing that is possible would be to direct the con board to approve a gradually increasing number of applications. So, for example, if Alaska currently approves 60% of con applications, the board could be directed to approve 70% next year, 80% the following year, and 100%, eventually leading up to 100%. I'm not aware, to be honest, of a state that's done that approach, but that would seem to be a way that I would think that might, get the market prepared for it and perhaps, remove some hesitancy that some people might have about, a sudden repeal.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Next, we have Dr. Darcy Bryan, obstetrics and gynecology physician, with also associated with the Mercatus Center. So, Dr. Bryan, please feel free to provide your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Darcy Bryan, and I'm a practicing obstetrician-gynecologist as well as a senior affiliated scholar with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Dr. Mitchell is a colleague of mine. It's my privilege to testify regarding the impact of certificate of need laws on patients and healthcare providers, and I'm very, very happy to be able to do so. As you have heard already, a diversity of states have already overturned their certificate of need laws since the federal government withdrew its con mandate in 1987. And the main purpose of certificate of need has nothing to do with quality or diversity of choice for patient or healthcare provider. It's about a committee determining if a healthcare service is economically valuable. I'm mostly going to speak from the standing of a practicing physician and my experience in working with healthcare facilities, both hospitals as well as surgery centers. There's a strong evidence that states without certificate of need have 30% more hospitals per capita and 14% more ambulatory surgery centers, more hospice and dialysis centers, as Dr. Mitchell had mentioned. And there's also good evidence that quality is improved through competition and diversity of options for patients. Professionally, I've had the very good fortune of practicing in states that have either significantly pared back or eliminated their certificate of need laws. And so I can testify that as a practicing doctor, I've had the ability to direct my patients to the surgery center or the hospital that I thought would provide the best level of care for their particular surgery or condition. I've had the ability to hold multiple hospital privileges, which has given me fluidity in my decision-making. It's given me flexibility in my decisions for my patients as well, which has then enabled me to have a significant voice in medical staff meetings. As you're aware, healthcare administrators are primarily businessmen and women. That's their job, is to advocate for the success of the institution for which they work. And physicians are granted privileges to work in their facility, and in turn, these facilities reach out to physicians hoping that they'll bring their patient populations to them for healthcare and referrals. And providers in turn wish to practice in a facility that's going to provide quality and patient satisfaction, which reflects well on them professionally in their ability to do their job to the best and make certain that their patients are well taken care of. But I do have to say that practicing in a region with a regional monopoly would pretty much guarantee the hospital or the surgery center your business as a provider, and that quite often would lead to an administration resistant to change and investing in terms of quality and care. So, for example, you can imagine if you're the only surgery center and a provider wants you to buy a particular piece of expensive operative equipment that's shown to have better outcomes surgically but is less cost-effective, quote-unquote, than a cheaper piece of equipment, you can pretty much tell that provider that you're not going to purchase that equipment, and good luck to them because they have nowhere else to go. But I do think, though, in my experience, that I've seen doctors advocate for new equipment purchases with the ability to say, hey, I'm not going to operate at your surgery center. I'm not going to operate in your hospital. I've got someplace else that I can take my patients, someplace that's more amenable and more responsive to what I think needs to be done. So I do think that advocacy is an empowerment for physicians is much more effective in a competitive environment in terms of purchasing new equipment, in terms of improvements for the operating room, nursing staffing ratios, and quality metrics. Another thing to mention, which is a relatively new phenomena of the century, is that physician practices are being purchased by hospitals at a really rapid clip. And this has increased by 128% from 2012 to 2018. So if you're a physician, you've only got one employer in the community, which is a large hospital, Are you really going to want to tick them off by, you know, basically saying, hey, I don't agree with your quality metrics. I don't agree with your OR staffing. I think the equipment you're purchasing is horrible. You pretty much have to leave town. You don't have any other options. So I think it really disempowers healthcare providers to only have one hospital, one surgery center in the community. And then finally, I wanted to bring forward that I do think, as we have seen, that we lack the ability to predict healthcare disasters. I think COVID-19 caught us all nationally unprepared. You could see retrospectively that given how small our world has become in terms of mobility from nation to nation, that a pandemic such as what we've all experienced was completely predictable, but no one predicted it in terms of setting up the adequate ICUs or hospital beds. So we lacked flexibility in healthcare supply to respond to a disaster. And I would say that we should expect more pandemics to come. And so I think at the community level, we should give freedom to healthcare providers at the community, on the ground, to make a decision as to what they need in terms of ICU beds, ventilators, hospital beds, flexibility in healthcare provision for their community, and having to run it through an administrative bureaucracy before they are able to move forward, I think hinders a quick and flexible response to patient care. So I would, in essence, say that I think certificate of need laws are an impediment to physicians striving to provide the highest quality of care for their patients at affordable prices. And I also think it leads to inability and flexibility to rapidly respond to impending healthcare disasters, which in my opinion are inevitable and probably will occur again. So I thank you all for your time. And if you have any questions, I would love to answer them to the best of my ability. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bryan. This is Senator Costello. You had mentioned that healthcare quality improves without certificate of need laws. And I was wondering if you could tell us how you measure quality.
Yes, I would have to say that in terms of metrics, you look at morbidity and mortality rates. So, for example, preventative post-operative deaths. Statistically, surgeries have a certain recognized mortality rate. And so you can compare those rates across hospitals and see how the how one patient population performs postoperatively, for example, after a cardiac bypass in a certain hospital versus another. Or I can speak to my own field in terms of obstetrics. We've certainly seen in terms of hospital metrics high cesarean section rates versus other hospitals which have lower rates of operative deliveries, blood loss, loss of maternal life through preeclampsia or other preventable problems.
Any questions from committee members? Okay. Well, Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, the doctor raises some very interesting questions on morbidity and is it possible to compare certificate of need hospitals versus those without certificate of need and what how morbidity was impacted during this pandemic?
I am aware that there are studies in existence on that. I do think I will pull in Dr. Mitchell on that because I know he's done a significant amount of work on those particular studies, but I do know that there are studies that have shown that those states with certificate of need have statistically significant higher mortality rates.
Dr. Mitchell, are you interested in responding briefly to Senator Stevens' question?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, through the chair. So I have not conducted the study, but I am happy to point you to it. There's a study by three healthcare economists, Sarpana Ghosh and some colleagues, called Certificate of Need Laws and Healthcare Utilization During COVID-19 Pandemic. What they found was states, I believe that they found higher rates of septicemia, diabetes, chronic lower respiratory disease, influenza, pneumonia, Alzheimer's disease, All of those were higher in con states relative to non-con states, as well as higher COVID deaths during the pandemic. So to my knowledge, I think that's the only study that's been done so far using, you know, the latest data following the pandemic, but I would predict there are likely to be quite a few more over the next few months.
Thank you. And Dr. Mitchell, if you could provide that study to the through the committee or point us to where we can find it, that would be wonderful. Senator Machicki?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd certainly like to see that data associating a higher rate of Alzheimer's with a CON or non-CON state. Seems like a fascinating comparison. I'm not sure how you get there, but I'd be very interested in seeing that data and the data. I'm sorry, I did not catch the female physician's name that testified.
Dr. Brian.
Dr. Brian, if she could provide you with her data as well, I'd be very interested in reviewing. What makes sense to me is that, and I'm not defending CON. I hope no one gets that impression. No one answered my original question. My original question is, why was there CON? There was CON earlier in the development of medical facilities in our country, and the competition may have kept any of them from being built. We're in a very different place in our history right now, and I get it. But I would like to see the comparisons in data that Dr. Brian provided as well, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and they're both listening, so appreciate that. And everyone else who's online waiting to testify, I also heard your question, so thank you for that. Next, Dr. Jeffrey Singer, who's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Dr. Singer, if you could introduce yourself for the committee and also mention what the Cato Institute is and how the institute receives its funding.
Sure. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jeffrey Singer, and I'm a senior fellow in health policy studies at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C. The Cato Institute is a nonpartisan public policy research institute. It receives no government funding, and the overwhelming majority of its funding is from individual donors. I'm also a general surgeon in private practice in Phoenix, Arizona for over 35 years. I'm actually speaking to you from my office there because I also had office hours today. And I appreciate this opportunity to provide my perspective on certificate of need laws. To answer an earlier question, originally in the early 1970s, a couple of states, I think Connecticut and New York State were among the first, experimented on their own with certificate of need laws under the thinking that by reducing the amount of healthcare facilities, they could reduce overall healthcare costs. In 1974, a federal law was passed that basically incentivized states to adopt certificate of need laws by providing funding for that. So now, more than three decades since repeal of that 1974 federal law that incentivized con laws, they still exist to varying degrees in 38 states. Con laws are a classic example of central planning, and they're heavily influenced by incumbent health providers, as was discussed by the previous testifiers. They render state healthcare systems sclerotic and unable to rapidly adjust their infrastructure to meet the changing demands of public health emergencies. Despite their ineffectiveness, states still have a variety of these laws on the books today. They differ in the type and number of restricted facilities and expenditures. For example, Ohio restricts only long-term care services, while Kentucky restricts more than 24 different types of healthcare facilities. The state in which I reside and practice medicine, Arizona, repealed all of its certificate of need laws except for ambulance services in 1990. And interestingly, this action was actually supported by the Arizona Hospital Association. In the 30 years since then, Arizona healthcare providers have not regretted the repeal of the certificate of need laws. By 1990, California, Colorado, Idaho, Kansas, Minnesota, New Mexico, South Dakota, Texas, Utah, Wisconsin, and Wyoming all repealed all of their certificate of need laws. As has been mentioned earlier, certificate of need laws effectively give monopoly privileges to existing hospitals and facilities. And when a new provider petitions for a certificate, established providers are usually invited to testify against their would-be competitors. This means some healthcare practices can openly challenge the right to exist of any practice that might hurt their bottom line. Indeed, hospital administrators openly admit that protection against competition, thanks to certificate of need laws, has become an integral part of their business model. Hospital administrators argue that certificate of need laws allow them to generate enough revenue to provide 24-hour emergency services and uncompensated care. But physicians also provide 24-hour emergency services and provide plenty of uncompensated care, yet you don't see state professional organizations argue for creating a certificate of need requirement before allowing additional doctors, nurses, psychotherapists, physical therapists, et cetera, to set up practices in a state. And they would and should be publicly derided if they did so. New healthcare practitioners entering the state may provide competition to the incumbent healthcare practitioners, but this has not stunted the growth of the healthcare profession. Instead, it has benefited healthcare consumers by increasing choice and access. One of the original purposes of certificate need laws was to encourage hospital substitutes. Yet, ironically, 28 states now have restrictions on ambulatory care services, a common hospital substitute, which competes with traditional hospitals. Long-term care and hospice care can be offered either in nursing homes or through home health care services. Comparisons between states with some certificate of need laws and those with no certificate of need laws show hospice expenditures in states with certificate of need laws are dominated by more costly nursing homes rather than alternatives like home health care. Incumbents often claim that certificate of need laws reduce health care expenditures, and of course this claim runs counter to economic theory, which would predict that a supply restriction will increase prices. While some may argue that the increase in prices will reduce health care consumption, the third-party payer system that we have insulates consumers from the impact of price increases, thus having little impact on utilization. With healthcare consumers largely insulated from price effects, the reduction in healthcare expenditures can only be achieved by reducing the availability and access to healthcare. A Mercatus Center review, as Dr. Mitchell is here and has spoken about, a review of 20 academic studies found that certificate of need laws largely failed to achieve their goal of reducing healthcare costs and concluded that the overwhelming evidence is that certificate of need laws are associated with higher per unit costs and higher expenditures. Governments that embrace central planning fall victim to what economists call the knowledge problem. It's impossible to predict how many healthcare facilities and services will be needed to serve a growing and dynamic population. Markets are the most accurate and efficient way of allocating goods and services. With the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic, many states realized that their con laws left them unprepared for a sudden surge in demand for critical care and other health care services, and 20 states, including Alaska, suspended their con laws. This was a tacit admission that certificate of need laws impede the rapid response of the health care system to changes in society. Alaska lawmakers should heed the lessons provided by the public health crisis and act now to repeal certificate of need laws and rid their health care systems of discredited central planning reminiscent of a bygone era. And with that, I'll be happy to take questions. I thank the committee for this opportunity.
Any questions for Dr. Singer? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate everyone who testified. And if we could get your testimony in writing, that I think would be helpful to committee members and the other materials that we'd asked for. I'm going to go ahead and open the public testimony portion for this bill. I know many people have been waiting very patiently since the beginning of the committee, and I ask also that you keep your testimony to 2 minutes. We will begin with David Ballett with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. David, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this important issue. My name is David Ballett. I'm the director of the Right on Healthcare Initiative at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. In addition to that, I have worked in the healthcare industry as a hospital executive and CEO for nearly 20 years. I am testifying in support of SB 26. CON regulation was introduced to control healthcare costs, as we've heard, and to improve quality of care. The basic assumption underlying CON regulation is that excess healthcare facility capacity results in healthcare price inflation. However, the literature, as we've heard, provides mixed results, and on average, finding that CON increases health expenditures and overall elderly mortality. So again, the findings have told us that this regulation does the exact opposite of what it was intended to do. Let's look at a current example related to costs. It's next to impossible for a patient to walk into a hospital and see a list of prices for services it offers. Yet, according to a national survey from May of 2020, nearly 9 out of 10 people believe all prices in healthcare should be disclosed. Even though there is a federal law that requires hospitals to post their negotiated rates, the rate of compliance for hospitals in Alaska is 21%, among the lowest in the nation. The message that they're sending is that they do not want any competition. They also don't want you, the patients, to know the negotiated prices with insurers. The negotiated rates that they have achieved by leveraging their market power directly attributed to this regulation that protects them from competition. As it pertains to delivering quality care to the communities, the state of Alaska, as well as 24 other states, suspended CON laws in the wake of COVID-19 pandemic. Medical services have been critical during the pandemic and any others that, they've been critical during this pandemic and any others that may arise, but maintaining this restrictive regulation will continue to artificially limit the number of providers by requiring businesses to prove their services are needed. In a market-based economy, the customer is the one that provides that feedback, not the existing competitors.
David, if you could wrap up your comments, please.
I'm on my last portion. To conclude, it's important to note that Alaska has been approving all the applications for certificates of late, and despite this practice, none of the terrible things that the Hospital Association has said would happen have happened. I ask you to look favorably upon this bill, and I'm welcome to take any questions.
Thank you. Next, Ed Martin, if you could introduce yourself for the committee and provide your 2 minutes of public testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair Costello. Hello, Peter. How are you doing? First off, I'd like to say quality and profit doesn't always go hand in hand. Secondly, free enterprise and capitalism is what America's about. And had we had a lot more competition, I think our health care costs would go down. That's pretty evident. There's evidence that centralization and planning has cost us all a lot. And I'm 66 years old right now, folks. I've got 6 stents in my heart. Now, I'm a good candidate for dying right this second at any time. But you know something? I'm not fearful of that. And I don't think the state of Alaska should be fearful of building more or allowing more free enterprise so that we'll allow these costs to come down so that maybe when I do need that health care, I have options. I have choice and access. And I don't think, Peter, that we really need to go back to 1965 and figure out why it cost me and my wife about $385 to have a baby, and yet you go to a hospital today, and it's about $3,500 to maybe $15,000. So, that's reality in my mind. Let's move on. As you said earlier today, let's get the business done. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair. And, Peter, please call me. Thank you, folks.
Thank you, Mr. Martin, and I enjoyed our conversation yesterday. Appreciate the phone call. Next, we have Patrick Shire with the Pacific Health Coalition. Patrick, if you could introduce yourself for the committee and provide your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Shire. I serve as the Alaska membership representative for the Pacific Health Coalition. We're a private nonprofit coalition of more than 50 self-funded health plans across Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. The coalition assists these plans and their 240,000 members in finding ways to provide the best price and value and quality health care. Leveraging available competitive principles, member plans saved over $500 million in 2019. The coalition has 2 employees and is supported by member health plans. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 26 and indeed in favor of measures generally that seek to enlist the immense power of freer markets in the pursuit of better health care access and pricing. You may recall the coalition sponsored a lunch and learn in the Capitol building in 2019 featuring Charles Silver and David Hyman, authors of the book Overcharged, Why Americans Pay Too Much for Healthcare. The authors make a compelling case that government distortions of market forces, however well-intended, almost always result in counterintuitive and negative outcomes. One glaring example is the federal measure prohibiting the reimportation of insulin that was passed in late 1998. Whatever its intent, its effect was a tenfold increase in the price Americans and Alaskans pay in order to obtain this life-saving compound. This is not to say government intervention is never warranted, but the certificate of need has outlived its usefulness and now creates monopolistic barriers to entry in an industry that is of critical value to Alaskans. Repeal of the certificate of need is but one necessary step as we examine together how we can further unravel the many distortions present in the healthcare industry, helping providers, payers, and consumers to think afresh about high-quality, cost-effective healthcare delivery in Alaska. I recommend passage of Senate Bill 26. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Singer. Next, we'll move on to Wendy Schrag from Kansas. Wendy, if you could please put yourself on the record, tell us who you're with, and give us your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Wendy Schrag, and I represent Fresenius Kidney Care. Fresenius provides life-sustaining dialysis services to about 325 dialysis patients in 11 of our clinics in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Soldotna, and Wasilla. Regarding CON, we support the Certificate of Need program. CON laws have established a long history of stability for reputable dialysis providers and investments in our clinics and equipment. I'd like to respond a little bit about a testimony earlier that said that non-CON states have more dialysis clinics. More dialysis clinics are not always better. I can speak a little bit about that. I live in a non-CON state, and I have two dialysis clinics 10 minutes from my house. Both of them operate at only 50% capacity and are only open 3 days a week. The other 3 days a week, they sit there empty. So our community really doesn't need two clinics. It would be fine with one. We also built a new clinic in another nearby community, and when a third dialysis provider came in, we had to close that clinic within the first 5 years. So dialysis clinics have to stay afloat by balancing the current population of needs and the expected growth needs. 85 to 90% of our funding comes from Medicare and Medicaid because our dialysis patients are entitled to Medicare regardless of their age. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, CON supports access to care in outlying areas. Our rural clinics in Alaska, especially in Soldotna and Juneau, could potentially close or not be opened in the first place without CON. Dialysis providers need to know that they'll be able to survive in areas of low patient population. CON provides the security of knowing that if a dialysis clinic opens, it will have the patient base it needs to survive. For example, we currently only have 19 patients in Juneau, and that's a really low number, but we know that Juneau needs a dialysis clinic because of its isolation, and we know that we will have that patient base. Our Soldotna clinic only has 24 patients, so it's in a similar situation. We also had to close our home dialysis training program in Juneau due to low patient numbers. So without CON, providers may be reluctant to go in some of the outlying areas. For these reasons, we support CON and ask you to vote no on SB 26. Thank you for allowing me to provide testimony today.
Thank you, Wendy. Next, I'm going to go to Bethany Markham with the Alaska Policy Forum. Bethany, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, and thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Chairman Costello and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. During the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Alaska legislature, along with 23 other states, suspended requirements for some certificates of need. As with other government regulations that were suspended during this crisis, the government got out of the way to allow delivery of essential services to people who needed them in a timely manner. If this flexibility was needed during the healthcare crisis, then action should be taken to extend this policy. The requirement for burdensome certificates of need should be repealed in Alaska. Currently, by requiring entrepreneurs to prove that there is a need for their services rather than letting the market determine that, certificates of need make it difficult and expensive to open new health facilities. And in a state like ours with significant healthcare access issues, that is a hard pill to swallow. Less access means fewer facilities and providers, which prevents people from getting the care they need while also driving up costs. Certificate requirements also stifle innovation and competition by establishing a system of central planning and cronyism. Patients are left with high costs, lower quality, and fewer healthcare options. Established hospitals, clinics, and other medical providers, as well as special interest groups representing these entities, are big fans of certificates of need because they quash potential competitors. Existing providers are allowed to give input on matters that would bring in businesses that will be in direct competition with them. That's good for existing providers, but bad for healthcare consumers who pay the ultimate price. Patients, providers, and the market should be the determiners of what new medical facilities may open in an area. With 15 states having already removed their requirements, it's time for Alaska to follow suit. This is a very popular policy reform with voters. A recent poll showed that 59% of all voters support eliminating certificate of need licensing processes. Alaska already has some of the most challenging access and most expensive health care in the country. The legislature should now do everything it can to alleviate this situation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Bethany. And again, I appreciate your patience today. And I owe you a phone call, so I hope to talk to you later. Next, Alicia Plemom off from Illinois. Alicia, if you could please provide your testimony to the committee and keep it, if you can, to 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Dr. Alicia Plemons. I'm an assistant professor at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville and a research affiliate for the Knee Center for the study of occupational regulation at St. Francis University. For background, I'm the person who wrote the COVID study that they had talked about earlier that looks at how con malls affected mortality during the pandemic time. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about those results. Today I'm here to support SB 26, which repeals Alaska's Certificate of Need law. I don't need to go into the background of laws are for you. I'm sure you're going to be hearing about it all day. But I do want to remind people that con malls don't affect just the big purchases, the new hospital wings, the MRI machines, but instead they affect much more than that, even down to the number of beds within an ICU. Now, a couple of things that I also haven't heard mentioned so far is that purchases requiring approval through con malls in Alaska take between 60 and 180 days to get through the application period. And the fees range from $2,500 to almost $75,000. And any time during this process, competitive healthcare providers can intervene and offer arguments for why their application should be denied. In 2019, 35 states in the District of Columbia had versions of con law. During the pandemic, many of these states lifted these restrictions through temporary suspensions or repeals. And Alaska was one of these wonderful states who decided that we needed to let healthcare be able to purchase and move beds very, very quickly. So a working paper by myself and my co-authors analyzed the legal changes using CDC mortality files and found that when states that were experiencing high COVID hospitalization rates, such as Alaska, chose to suspend con laws, restricting the amount of hospital beds, there was a significant reduction in the deaths not only from coronavirus, but from other diseases that were using similar medical equipment, including septicemia, diabetes, chronic lower respiratory disease, influenza, pneumonia, and advanced Alzheimer's disease. These legal changes saved approximately 26 lives a week in between March and the end of June. 3 points that I want to just have from my testimony today is to let you know, first off, that certificate of need laws impacted purchasing during the pandemic and restricted healthcare facilities across the nation from responding to rising demand. Second, Alaska saved lives by temporarily suspending these con laws. And third, repealing certificate of need laws can avoid these emergencies in the future by allowing hospitals and healthcare providers to prepare today for these emergencies. While I'm focusing on the pandemic, I just want to note that there has been extensive research on con laws over the past decade. Matthew Mitchell, who you heard from earlier, has been involved in many of these wonderful studies. Dozens of data-driven, peer-reviewed studies in academic journals have had consistent results that were found by the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice in their positions that argued that con laws, though well-intentioned policies, have fallen short of their goal to protect access to high-quality care for rural and underserved communities by preventing competition that would otherwise keep quality high and prices low.
Alicia, if you could wrap up your testimony, and then also if you could provide your research to the committee, many of us, I know, will read that.
Sure, no problem. I just want to say that I believe SB 26 represents an opportunity to do better and to put the lives of the residents of Alaska first and foremost in the fight for better health care. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and also for your patience. I appreciate it. Next, from Glen Allen, we have Yvonne Ito, who is calling in to testify. Yvonne, if you could state your name for the committee and provide your testimony, that would be appreciated.
Hi, Yes, good afternoon. My name is Yvonne Ito, and I'm a doctor of social work at Crossroad Medical Center in Glen Allen, very small community. And we are for the SB 26 because it is already difficult to obtain services out in rural Alaska. And with all of the con laws and certificates that we have to go through, it just makes it even harder. And we'd like the opportunity to be able to just focus on providing services to the clients in the community. Mental health has been a huge crisis, and it just makes sense, and it's easier for this law to be repealed. And I'm sorry, this is my first time testifying, so I'm kind of nervous, but that's all I wanted to say is please consider the communities that we're serving and the access to care.
Well, Yvonne, we really appreciate you calling in, and you did wonderfully. Senator Michicki, you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you, Yvonne. That was the perfect public testimony. Short to the point, you let us know exactly how you feel, and you gave us a new perspective for rural communities. So thank you very much. Please call in more often.
And Yvonne, I also want to add, this is Senator Costello, that I'm looking here at those who are waiting to testify, and I appreciate that there are Alaskans who will be directly affected by this who are testifying this afternoon. And so with that, I would like to invite Sarah Hedemy, who's calling in from Anchorage. Sarah, if you could provide your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Hedemy, and I'm representing myself. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 26. During the pandemic, Alaska was one of 20 states that either suspended portions of their con law or enabled emergency provisions. Essentially, states were reacting quickly in order to try to alleviate strains on their medical systems so we could better respond to the pandemic. So con law, what's really supposed to be beneficial, seems to rather be the opposite, burdensome. We allowed providers flexibility to respond to the pandemic. I just don't see why not allow them the same flexibility year-round for various services. You know, quality health care should matter regardless of the medical issue one faces. Or is it that we only want the best care for COVID-related cases? It just seems a little discriminatory to other medical issues one might face. An analysis conducted by the Mercatus Center finds that con laws are associated with fewer hospital beds per capita, fewer ambulatory surgical centers per capita, fewer rural hospitals per capita, fewer rural ambulatory surgical centers per capita, fewer hospice care facilities, fewer dialysis clinics, fewer hospitals offering MRI and CT scans, longer driving distances to obtain care, and greater racial disparities in the provision of care. So con law might have had its time, place, and good intentions, but today it appears really evident that it only benefits and protects a couple of big players rather than the people. It seems like repealing con law would help improve health care overall for all Alaskans. So that's why I support Senate Bill 26. Thank you for my time and the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate your patience this afternoon. Next, calling in from Anchorage is Jared Kosin, with the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Jared, if you could provide your testimony to the committee, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jared Kosin, and I am the President and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. ASHNA respectfully opposes Senate Bill 26. We agree problems exist with the current CON program, but a wholesale statutory repeal is not the answer. Having 2 minutes to respond to all of the assertions made so far is impossible. For example, CON has been waived during the pandemic to allow alternate care sites and temporary hospital beds to be operationalized, not to allow ordinary capital projects to occur without government review, and no such ordinary capital projects have occurred without CON review. No provider is asking to keep these beds operational on a permanent basis. going back to the free market argument for repeal, if healthcare truly was a free market, then repeal may make sense, but it's not. Hospitals are required to maintain an emergency room. They have a duty to treat all incoming patients regardless of ability to pay, and we must be open 24 hours a day, 365 days per year. In contrast, competitors like ambulatory surgery centers do not have a duty to treat, and they are generally open Monday through Friday from 8 to 5. The point here is that customers are not choosing between two similarly situated goods or grocery stores, like the example made earlier, in a free market where the lowest cost wins. Rather, they are choosing between two totally different products where one is subject to a host of expensive requirements that the other is not. ASHNA urges this committee to look at the regulatory framework of CON rather than a full repeal. Please vote no on Senate Bill 26. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared. And I wanted to mention to you and also anyone who is interested, written comments are welcome. So if you feel that you would like to respond to more issues, please feel welcome to provide those comments along with anyone else who's testified this afternoon. Next, Karen Perdue from Fairbanks. Welcome, Karen. I appreciate you staying online to testify on this bill.
Thank you, Senator Costello. Just a little bit about me. Been long involved with the CON process as Deputy Commissioner and Commissioner of the Department of Health. Currently speaking as a volunteer trustee of our Foundation Health Partners here in Fairbanks. Honestly, it's been a little hard for me to listen to this because I think the committee does need to slow down and listen to some broader perspectives on this issue. The CON law is not old and outdated. It might need some refresh, but most states still have a CON program. And I would say that the reason Alaska needs a CON program is we are so rural, and when it comes to healthcare, volume is everything. Volume controls cost. We have about one person per square mile in our state, and no other state is like that. And so we struggle with volume. I just want to speak about Fairbanks trying to support a hospital system on one of the population of 100,000 people. Requires us to be very systematic about not segmenting our market further. We do have a surgery center in Fairbanks, and it's very robust. It was gained its status through the CON process. And, in fact, many surgery centers in Alaska have gained their status through the CON process, so the process does work. Most of our surgeons practice at both the hospital and the surgery center there are cases that cannot be done safely at the surgery center. But the center has diminished surgeries at the hospital by about 30%. That is, we are trying to make our bond obligations and provide services to our community. Surgeons do worry about the safety of the surgeries they perform, but they also have an economic interest in practicing at a place they own. We are very worried about niche providers coming in and taking just very specialized high-profit areas. One of the things I'm curious about is why there's an indeterminate fiscal note on this bill. It might be because the cost would be very high. As I understand it, it takes the lid off long-term care. Skilled nursing is paid about 80% by the state of Alaska through Medicaid. Adding long-term care beds is an automatic addition to the state Medicaid program. When I was commissioner, when we authorized the long-term care certificate of need, we automatically added several million dollars to the state budget. And there is a shortage of long-term care in Alaska, but it's been a long-term policy for us to try to have services in the community. By the way, we have the least restrictive use of restraints in the nation for those experts who said that would be a consequence of CON. The other thing is that your packet shows the Mercatus Center saying that without CON, we would have 11 more healthcare facilities in Alaska, 8 more hospitals. Wow. Rural hospitals are barely making it here. Our smallest hospitals, Cordova, Seward, Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg, what other communities would be added? CON has done a job of managing healthcare infrastructure. You need to ask the department what it would cost to add 8 new hospitals and more 300 or 400 new long-term care beds and what the cost would be of licensing those and managing those. Interestingly, the same study showed that we only needed two more surgery centers, so I guess we're doing okay there. The final thing I want to say is that last year has taught us a lot about our healthcare system. It has been, you know, a trial for anyone who's provided care, including hospitals. And this is a very tough conversation we're having when we've just gone through a period where our hospitals have really performed for us in our state. And I can say it would not have been possible to manage the pandemic in Fairbanks, I can say this unequivocally, without a functioning vital hospital system. We do not have a health department in Fairbanks, and we're not going to get one. So FHP provided the medical leadership and the boots on the ground to get us through. We are a huge part of the public health infrastructure in our community, and it's not the time right now to talk about how to weaken our capacity or some broad things about how nice it would be to have, you know, provider choice in a town of 100,000 or 50,000 or Juneau of 30,000, but really to ask how our system can be strengthened, because we only made it through because people really put their shoulder to the wheel. And I do think that this bill would cripple that capacity. I can say that for Fairbanks, absolutely. Don't pass this bill. Do a lot more research on it, and don't take this idea that we are like a grocery store. You know, we're more like a power plant in our community. And, you know, it's different than Home Depot and the small hardware store. It's really more about if the power is going to work when it's 40 below out. That's what this hospital represents to our community. So I really hope you will consider that most states still have CON. We have CON for a reason, and there's a lot of cost to not having it. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you for serving as both commissioner and deputy to the Department of Health and Social Services. It's nice to hear your voice. Our final testifier today will be Ryan McKee with Americans for Prosperity. I do want to mention to those who've been waiting patiently online, I will keep public testimony open, and we will begin Friday's meeting with finishing up the public testimony. So please feel free to call in at that time. Also, please feel free, anyone, to provide your comments in writing, and we will finish up with Ryan McKee and appreciate the committee members. I know we have other committees that are chaired by members on this committee, so that is why I'm going to be ending the meeting at 3 o'clock. So, Ryan, welcome, and please feel free to provide your testimony and state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yeah, my name is Ryan McKee. I'm the State Director of Americans for Prosperity here in Alaska, and calling to voice our support for SB 26. There's been a lot of examples that have been stated, so I won't get into too much detail here. The recent COVID-19 pandemic did show that, you know, having preparation, having the ability to have beds and all of that is a necessary thing, and it was something obviously we weren't ready for. And because of that, you know, many cities shut down, businesses have gone out of business, have completely closed, and the main thing was because the hospitals were getting overwhelmed and they had to basically, you know, stop the curve. And so there was a lot of impacts on not being prepared. And so if con law, you know, repealing this can help be better prepared, I think that has a very positive effect all around Alaska and not just in the healthcare sector. Also, con law also creates a monopoly, as it's been stated a few times here, where large healthcare organizations can control who gets approved and who doesn't. And there's a lot of examples around the country of smaller groups trying to offer services needed in their communities, only to get shut down by the larger and more powerful healthcare organizations. And for specific examples, a lot of them have written letters to your office, and there's a lot of supporting documents. So I'd encourage you guys to go ahead and look through all of those, and they're all expressing support for SB 26. And so healthcare in Alaska, it's already extremely expensive and forces many Alaskans to leave the state to seek treatment in more affordable areas. And I'm sure we all know people who have gone to different places. My dad saved thousands of dollars going to Mexico to get his teeth fixed because it just was too expensive here. And so, you know, this shouldn't happen. And we should work to create a state where competition is welcome and healthcare is affordable for all Alaskans. So I thank you for your time, and I would encourage you to support SB 26.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate your testimony. I will be keeping public testimony open on Senate Bill 26. We will start Friday's meeting on April 23rd at 1:30 by finishing up public testimony. I appreciate those who waited patiently online and were not able to provide it, but we will keep it open. Also on Friday, we will hear Senate Bill 17, Senator Begich's energy efficiency bill. And with that, we are adjourned.